Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we start a two-day profile of the contenders to be the next mayor of the city of Tulsa. And interestingly, in this campaign cycle, both candidates are seeking their second term as mayor. Incumbent Dewey Bartlett is seeking re-election. We'll speak with him tomorrow. And his immediate predecessor, Kathy Taylor, was Tulsa mayor from 2006 to 2009. And she's our guest today. Taylor is an attorney and has previously served as the Oklahoma Secretary of Commerce and Tourism and also as director of the Department of Commerce in Governor Brad Henry's administration. In fact, after her term as mayor, Taylor returned to the Henry administration as his top education advisor and led the state's efforts for race to the top federal funding. I spoke with Kathy Taylor last week, and she's our guest today here on Studio Tulsa. Kathy Taylor, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
I want to take you back to begin with to your last term. What would you consider your biggest accomplishment during your term as mayor?
Well, I think guiding the city through the worst recession that this country's seen in 70 years was certainly a team effort with our department heads and the city council, but we knew as revenues in the spring began to fall at historic rates that we had to make cuts and tough decisions, and we had to do it in a way that laid the foundation for the future so that when the economy recovered, we still had a safe city that had good roads and that provided good public services. And so together with the city council and our department heads, we cut $20 million out of the budget. We got all seven of our employee bargaining groups to agree to 8 furlough days simultaneously with no grievances filed. And that really was a result of a team effort. And it is what laid the groundwork for being able to keep those police officers on the street when I was in office and the city to have laid a great foundation, particularly in the downtown revitalization, so that as the economy came back, we began to see investments. For example, we now know that there has been $1 billion in investment downtown subsequent to the completion of the BOK Center and One Oak Field. And in fact, property values have increased 70%. So I think my biggest accomplishment was keeping a steady hand on the city's finances and making sure that we guided the city in a very strategic and responsible way for the future.
Let me fold that into a next question, which has to do with where revenues are today. Right now, revenues are lagging behind projections. It's certainly nothing like 2008 and 2009 when you were mayor. But if they continue to decline or not grow the way we hope to, what would be your criteria for managing the budget?
So it's a little bit of a complicated issue, but I budgeted, as did the mayors before me, in a very different way than this administration is budgeting. The projected revenues are based upon 30 years of data that the finance team puts together. But still, they're projections, just like in your business. In my business life and in government, I never budgeted the full amount of the projected revenues. I budgeted 5% below. So in addition to the operating reserve that every mayor has always kept, I also kept a 5% cushion between the projections and the actual. So that's not happening. In the last three budgets, they've budgeted right up to projected revenues, and then they have also budgeted unrealized balances that were kind of left over in accounts at year end, which we didn't do either. And so that means any small bump, and this has only been a very small bump, any small bump in decline puts you into kind of a double tailspin. I just wouldn't budget that way. I don't think it's fiscally responsible.
You mentioned unspent money at the end of the year. What would you do with that?
So what we did at the beginning of May is we sent a memo out to all of our department heads because we know bills don't always come in right at June 30th. And we said accrue for anything that is remaining. So that's the first thing is you usually end up then with a very small fund balance, maybe $2 or $3 million. In the last few years, for some reason, they have budgeted a couple months of projected revenues from the prior year. So I believe in more fiscal budgeting. I started practicing law when the business was in the transportation industry during many ups and downs in the economy. So I know what it means to make sure that you have money socked away in case the economy changes. And I think that is a fiscally conservative approach to budgeting. It's just a different style than Mayor Bartlett has had.
Well, let's talk about the biggest challenge confronting the next mayor. What do you see as the biggest challenge for the next 4 years? And if you're elected, what will be your biggest focus?
Well, I think the biggest challenge in the next, there are really two, but the primary one is crime. You cannot sell houses, get companies to move into your city, get people to attend your school system if you do not have a safe city. And right now, Tulsans don't feel safe, and with good reason. We see every day in the paper someone being held up at gunpoint. One of the biggest shows that we've ever brought to Tulsa with the help of the Convention and Visitors Bureau and the county is the Arabian Horse Show. People from all over the country come. One of their vendors was held up at gunpoint, and I talked to someone that was there, and literally a gun was stuck in his forehead, and his money and his phone was demanded right outside the fairgrounds. Now, that is not positive for bringing additional commerce and revenues to our city. So we have to get a control on crime. Cities all around the country are able to do that. Putting enough officers on the street, using smart technology to help prevent crime and also catch criminals, and engaging the community. Last night, I was at the Crime Stoppers event, and maybe it's no surprise that it's one of the largest events they've had, because I think people understand we have to take a community approach to solving crime. And without a safe city and without a city that has a good public education system, jobs are simply not going to stay here, and our workforce will not stay in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
If I can follow up on crime, you mentioned that citizens don't feel safe, and I think that's maybe a proper perception. But when I know the Tulsa police, as you well know, released their violent crime statistics that showed a slight drop in overall violent crimes. But what is greatly higher is the number of homicides in the city. What would you do as mayor working with the police to reduce that homicide figure?
Six of those homicides were victims of domestic violence. I would focus on that with the Family Safety Center and DIVIS to make sure that we provided education and resources. Two of those homicides were children who were murdered as a result of child abuse. So those are two categories of prevention. In addition, some of those, Chief Jordan and the mayor were right, some of those were gang violence. I don't consider any life to be disposable. And when I was mayor, we put gang intervention workers on the street to help get kids out of gangs and into productive lifestyles. We started the Mayor's Mentoring to the Max program to reach kids at an early age, let them know that there was hope and a guiding light for them. And together with Tom McCann and Stuart Price, we put together TCC's Tulsa Achieves so that we could give kids a goal. If they could get out of high school, be graduated from high school in Tulsa County, regardless of their poverty circumstance, they could go and get a two-year college degree tuition-free. We know that 84% of our kids at TPS live at or below the poverty level. It's very different than when you and I were in school. They need food, they need their sicknesses addressed and illnesses addressed, and they need a guiding light in their life. So there are a lot of ways to address homicide that doesn't just mean writing a report about the death. Again, I don't believe any life is disposable, and I know cities like Cincinnati have decreased violent crime from gang violence by 50%.
You mentioned smart technology. What sort of smart technology tools do you think the police should be using that they aren't now?
Well, it's not just police, but it's also citizens. So the early version of smart technology was called CompStat. We brought that to Tulsa when I was mayor, and it is not just a data system that allows police to see trends in crime, but it also allowed, we had it open to the public so that the public could come and hear that reporting, neighborhood association leaders, so they could understand what was happening in their neighborhood, help be the eyes and ears for police officers. But following crime trends as a community helps us figure out how to tackle the problem. For example, I said six of the homicides were domestic violence. Clearly, we need to analyze those domestic violences. How and why did that happen? Where could we have intervened? From this year to last year, rape is up 17.7%. If I was mayor, I would have called people in a room. We would have analyzed how that data occurred and then reached out to not just police officers, but other groups. Well, is it an education issue for women that are out? Do they need to understand what to look for? Is there a serial rapist out there? Do we need to understand this is happening? I don't know, because the data is not publicly available.
You mentioned two big challenges, and we talked about crime, but the other one?
Education.
Education.
I talked to a group of realtors recently, and they said they find it hard to sell a house in Tulsa where the people have young children because they don't want to go to Tulsa public schools. I think there's two issues. One is I think we have some amazing leadership, Keith Ballard at TPS. We're doing some great things to turn that school system around. But we definitely have high challenges when we have 84% of our population and when we have received the highest decrease in state funding for public education of any state in the nation. So we've got to change the dialogue in our community and raise our hand and say that to be a vibrant city, to be a safe city, to be a city that attracts good jobs for the future, we have to have not just a good, but an excellent public education system. And that leadership of that dialogue needs to come directly from the mayor's office. It's not a choice for the mayor to be involved in education or not. It's an obligation if you want your city to prosper.
Now, under our state system, the mayor doesn't have a whole lot of influence over the educational system except for being a proponent and maybe a catalyst for community action. Is that how you envision the mayor's role or something more significant?
Well, I think the mayor can serve as a convener. I've met with the superintendents of all three school districts that are within the city of Tulsa, and they agree that having the mayor at the table helps when we lobby for funding, helps when we look at what issues that kids are having. For example, the gang issues, the gang outreach workers that we brought in, the mentoring program, the mayor's mentoring to the max with music program that Barry Epperly helped us launch. There are so many ways. Joint infrastructure planning. When we do a capital improvements package, the schools should be at the table. So are we enhancing parks that also can help support after-school programs at schools? There are so many ways that mayors can have a dramatic influence, not authority, but influence on the success of public education in Tulsa.
My guest today is former Mayor Kathy Taylor, who's seeking a second non-consecutive term as Tulsa mayor. Tulsa mayoral election will be taking place on Tuesday, November 12th, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Let's talk about the other big issue that probably you're hearing about, and that's the trash policy. I mean, there's been so much talked about the trash policy. What changes would you make to the way things are going now with the trash policy? Or would you make changes or major changes?
Well, first of all, this is a big issue because this was a, I think, 15-year multi-million dollar contract that we knew last November, or the city knew last November, was not working. And what should have happened last November is we should have been honest and accountable and said, you know what, citizens, this isn't working. We're going to have to look at the way we pick up green waste. And instead, what happened is we spent $1.2 million on communications to citizens about a system that we knew wasn't functioning. So people I talk to feel deceived. They feel betrayed. In fact, I think those are the specific words a young woman used at the Terror Board meeting last May. And it impacts their trust in government at all levels. So I think that it is vital right now that the mayor, and if I were mayor, I would raise my hand and say, I'm sorry, we were wrong. I would refund the green waste fees, and I would do just what I recommended in May and the city council did last night. I would have convened a citizen committee, including the council and some of the Terror Board members, and I would call experts in to find out how this is done in other cities right. Because here's what I know. Every city in America picks up trash, and a lot of cities do it right. Even the person at the city admitted at the Terror Board meeting that they called 50 cities that did green waste, and all 50 cities said, oh no, you cannot use plastic bags for green waste. Yet we not only used them, but we charged people money to have them picked up. It's time to come literally clean on this issue, and it has to come from the leadership of the mayor's office. That's how this city works. We have a strong mayor form of government. He's the CEO. He's got to raise his hand, say, I'm sorry, refund the green waste fees. If he doesn't do it, I'll do it the day I'm in office.
Now, are you committed to continuing a green waste program as mayor?
Well, I think citizens...
Even if it costs more money.
Well, I think that's what this... We need citizen input on this. I think citizens need to... Certainly the green waste facility needs to remain open, and we need to determine whether citizens want this program or not, are willing to pay for it. The interesting thing is they did this citizen survey in June, and the trash system had been in place, and there had been a lot of grumbling about it. They never asked the question in that citizen survey as to what people thought about the trash system. That would have been a perfect time, as we spent $50,000 I believe, of citizens' money to ask them what they thought, to ask them about the trash system in Greenwise.
Let's talk a little bit about the major infrastructure package, which will also be on the ballot. Are you a supporter of it? What do you like best about it? I assume if it's passed, there's really you have to implement that. There's no lot of say in how you do that, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I went to all but one of the meetings that they held with citizens that the council held across the city, and I applaud them for listening to the citizens and taking things out of the package that citizens were objecting to. And listening to citizens saying that we want our streets fixed. So there's a significant amount of money in that package for streets. I frankly believe that long term, both for our aging population and to retain young people, that the bus rapid transit that is in that package is a very good piece of that package. And I do support it. It's not a perfect package. There'll never be a package that everyone agrees 100% with. But what I'm most concerned, and it goes back to this honesty, transparency, and accountability. What I'm most concerned is that it be implemented in an accountable and transparent way so that Tulsans who are giving us their hard-earned tax dollars understand where every dollar is going, who's spending it, if projects are on budget or not. That spending information, not just static budget information, here's what we think we'll spend, actual spending project by project needs to be online. We started that with Fix Our Streets Live, and that was the goal. And that needs to happen in every area of city government, particularly, though, with a $918 million capital improvements project. I hope people will get educated and very much understand the need to invest in Tulsa's future in those propositions.
Since you brought up transit, the package calls for one bus rapid transit line along Peoria and Riverside. There was another proposal Tulsa Transit put forward that didn't make the final cut, and it was $10 million, which would increase all bus frequencies to 30 minutes. To me, that seemed like a no-brainer. As you become a 21st century, you're going to have transit. Transit is going to have to be a more important part of your community. Do you see that as a viable goal long-term? It's not going to make this package, but...
Well, absolutely. Long-term, we have to have alternative modes of transportation if we are going to be a growing city. You know, there are all these studies that show that the next generation, fewer and fewer driver's licenses are being issued. They want bike lanes. They want sidewalks. And again, Tulsa has an aging population as well. So both edges of our population, if you were age-wise, are going to demand this. And if we don't plan for it now, 20 years from now, we'll be even further behind than we are.
Let's talk a little bit about downtown. During your first term as mayor, you presided over a huge explosion, and I think the last 4 years have seen some of the benefits of that investment in downtown. Is downtown still the place where we should be investing, or are there other places in the city that we should really focus our attention at this point?
Well, I think that government did its work downtown. We invested in the streets. We invested in entertainment venues, infrastructure, and then what happens and what is supposed to happen is private industry came in and begin to invest. And that's the $1 billion of investment that's happened downtown. I think we need to take that model to other areas of the city. I think the next area that is prime for redevelopment is the 36th Street North area. University of Oklahoma has a great health clinic there. Typros did one of their street cred events. There's a small area plan. There's some funding for that in the capital improvements package. And it's a beautiful part of our city. We're beginning to see housing redevelop, and I think that we need to take that great model of government seeding the ground, but private industry, private investment doing the heavy lifting to other parts of our community, like 36th Street North.
What sort of seeding opportunities do you see at 36th Street North?
Well, I think there is an opportunity for a TIF. There is an opportunity to really focus on rebuilding housing stock, because what we know is retail follows rooftops. And so we need to make sure that we promote, protect, and provide great opportunities for housing in that area. And that way, then we'll be able to begin to attract retail. We're already seeing traffic go there because of the Wayman Tisdale Center. So we're part of the way there, but I think we could complete that by having a good housing plan for the city as a whole, including that area.
I want to ask you about charter changes for a moment. While you were mayor, there were plenty of charter changes. We're still dealing with charter changes. This long mayoral campaign is due to a charter change. Do you see any future changes we need to make in reaction to the changes we've already made, or should we let things lie for a while and see how they work?
Well, I think it is disturbing that we have changed our charter so many times. A charter is like a constitution, and it shouldn't be changed as much as we have. But I don't think anyone envisioned that a mayor's race would be run for almost a year. I don't think it is fair to the citizens to ask them to try to pay attention. And so I think that definitely needs to be changed. I also think that the voters said they wanted a nonpartisan election. They did not want to see the kind of national partisan gridlock come to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Oklahoma City's had a nonpartisan election, and when anyone's tried to make it partisan, all the former mayors have stood up in unison and said, stop, that's not what we want our city to be. This nonpartisan election has been the most partisan election Tulsa has ever seen. I think citizens need to make a decision and stand up and say, we want it to be partisan or we want it to be nonpartisan, but let's not be deceptive and say it's a nonpartisan election and then bring in presidential candidates to campaign.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, this is our first nonpartisan election. I mean, to me, we come from a partisan background. It's kind of hard to let go of that tradition.
I don't think if you listen to the voters, you let go of the tradition. The voters said they wanted this to be a nonpartisan election. They didn't want to see the kind of games that were being played in Washington, D.C., played in their home city, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I think that, frankly, the Bartlett campaign has simply not, they've turned a deaf ear to what the voters ask for. If the voters want to change their mind, then that needs to go on a ballot. But otherwise, I, for one, am listening to the voters, listening to Tulsans.
My guest today is former Mayor Kathy Taylor, who's seeking a second term as Tulsa mayor. The Tulsa mayoral election is taking place on Tuesday, November 12th. She served prior to Dewey Bartlett and is asking for a second term on November 12th. Also on the ballot will be a major infrastructure package, streets improvements and infrastructure improvements for the city. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Think about a big issue or a big project that the city of Tulsa should be thinking about. Probably won't impact the next four-year mayor, but it's a major issue or project that we should be thinking about for the long-term health of the city or improvement of the city. Can you think of something?
Well, first of all, I think before we think of any big projects, we've got to get the basics right. We've got to get crime under control. We've got to get our education system. We've got to get an honest and transparent government. And until we get back to those basics, I wouldn't think of any big project. But I'll tell you philosophically, a great concern I have about democracy, particularly what I'm seeing in Tulsa, is that young people are not voting. They believe that their voice doesn't matter at the ballot box. It's a little bit of a national trend. There was a study done recently where young people said their volunteer hours have gone up, their voting's gone down because they don't believe it matters. If that trend continues over the next 20 years, we only see 29% of the registered voters show up to vote in the mayor's race. 18 to 21-year-olds, I believe it's 4%. If that does not change, we will no longer have a representative democracy electing people in our community. And so for me, my philosophy would be to make sure that whether you're Republican, Democrat, or Independent, whether you're 85 or you're 18, that you have a seat at the table of government so that you'll get engaged, that you will vote, that you will get involved in committees, and ultimately that you will run for office.
I want to go back to something you said very early in our conversation that had to do with crime and putting more police on the street. The next mayor is going to probably have to renegotiate the jail contract. What would be your, if you're mayor, what do you think the most important things in renegotiating the contract and the negotiation points should be for the city?
Well, I think, first of all, sometimes we get in a rut when we look at things. And rather than saying, well, there's more people to put in the jail, why don't we look at alternatives? For example, when I was in office, we looked at the jail data. We found that many of the people that were being put in our jail were veterans, and they were veterans who were simply not getting the treatment that they needed, deserved, and were entitled to after fighting and defending our country. And so together with the cooperation of the Tulsa County judicial system, we put in place the Veterans Treatment Court. We put a mentoring system in place. We put 211, all the veterans programs on 211, and we now have had close to 100 veterans be graduated from that alternative sentencing program that didn't have to go into the Tulsa County Jail. So before we look at expanding or paying more for putting more prisoners in the jail, why don't we look at prevention, at alternative sentencing for nonviolent offenders, particularly for those who have served our country, I think was vital. But, you know, there's a program called Women in Recovery that is helping reduce recidivism in women who have been incarcerated for nonviolent crimes. Those are the kind of innovative things that we need to look at rather than immediately jumping to assuming we have to incarcerate a higher number of nonviolent offenders in our city.
On the state level, the Oklahoma Criminal Justice Reinvestment Initiative was passed a couple of years ago under the leadership of Chris Steele. And really, that has lain fallow since. And it's about reducing the number of state inmates. And the savings from incarceration can be applied to local communities, which I would think some of our high crime spots in Tulsa would qualify for some of that funding if it were actually fully implemented. Is that something you'd push for as mayor?
Yeah, absolutely. I have such great respect for Representative Steele. He is a great statesman that had courage and stood up to really change the way we looked.
Or tried
to change it. Well, he did change the way we looked at it, but you're correct. Without his leadership, it has not moved forward. I saw him the other day and had the opportunity to thank him again for his courage, because it took a lot of courage for him to begin to change that dialogue. But I think Tulsans need to look at that issue, and we need to try to take the same approach that Representative Steele took in this issue.
All right. Well, we're about out of time. I want to ask you to sum up why Tulsa voters should return you to the mayor's office on November 12th.
Well, I believe, as I said, that it's time for Tulsa to get back to the basics. Basics of making this a safe city so that we have streets that are safe to drive on during the day and walk on at night, that we raise our hand for a great education system so that there is hope for the generations to come, and that we implement our projects in Tulsa, our infrastructure, and everything that we do with people's hard-earned tax dollars in a very honest, transparent, and accountable way, and that we make sure that citizens know where their tax dollars are going, and that they and with whom they're being spent with, and that's my goal, is really to get the basics of this city right, so as there is no longer a crisis in confidence at City Hall, and I believe I have the proven leadership to do that, but I have the passion to make a difference in Tulsa. This would be my full time focus to get this city back to the basics.
Kathy Taylor, I appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
Good to hear from you.
Former Mayor Kathy Taylor speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She was the 38th mayor of the city of Tulsa from 2006 to 2009. Tomorrow on Studio Tulsa, we'll hear from incumbent Mayor Dewey Bartlett. Both are seeking re-election as mayor of the city of Tulsa on November 12th. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.